It's a Friday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we're talking about last night's Heat win over the Chicago Bulls and Josh Richardson's biggest scoring night in more than a month.
And we'll talk about how Joel Embiid's recent injury impacts how the Heat should approach the final playoff push. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
The Miami Heat beat the Chicago Bulls 103-92 on Thursday night and are closing in on clinching a playoff spot. All they have to do is win one more game when they play the Brooklyn Nets on Saturday. Josh Richardson scored 22 points, his highest scoring game, and the first time he scored at least 20 points since putting up 30 versus the Rockets on February 7th. A reassuring night from Josh Richardson. If he could start scoring like that again for Miami, their ceiling raises much higher.
Look, I mean, you have to install the caveat there that this was only a very bad Chicago Bulls team. They lost arguably their best player to an ejection late in the game. It's not like it was very particularly stiff competition, but still a positive sign. And I think we're starting to see more and more of that. Like the game before, he had a big night as well and against Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we definitely need to see out of Josh and the Heat need. They can't survive in the playoffs without
him. This is the first time, or only the second time, he's taken at least 16 shots all month. He took 17 shots in the first in Miami's first game on March 1st, and then before that, I mentioned that Houston game on February 7th. He took 20 shots in that game, so he doesn't normally put up as many shots. He was aggressive in this game, and I think that's part of it. But he shot 50%. I mean, he went 8 of 16 from the field. Only made one of his 4 3-point attempts, and you would expect that could go up in the future, and he could have had 25 points tonight. But you know, that's the part I like, is the aggression from Richardson. Is when he is making a point to get to his spots, he is a much more dangerous player. I mean, he's always going to do what he does defensively, right? Yeah. But when he's doing that, I think it really helps. And when you know, Goran Dragic had a solid night tonight. But he wasn't elite. He didn't score more than 20 points. And I think on those nights, it helps when Richardson, it's really not a big difference between like 13 points and 17 points or 17 points and like 20 points. But when he's able to put up 22 points, it really does take a big burden off of the rest of the team. Dragic, again, only had 17. Wade only had 8. It wasn't very aggressive with his own shot. So somebody had to step up, and that's just sort of what the Heat have been this entire season. And Josh Richardson just, I don't know, he, outside of Goran Dragic, I would say he's probably, and maybe even an Olenek, he's probably stepped up the most out of everybody else.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, well, you can make that argument for James Johnson, who had an off night after having locked down LeBron James a couple days before. But, you know, what I liked about Richardson is that he went 1 of 4 from the 3-point line, and normally that spells doom for him and his shooting confidence. But he still finished 8 of 16 overall, which means that he was still being aggressive and getting whatever shots he could at the rim in particular. And I think he had a couple of moves there where he had that scooping layup of his that he's gotten down to, you know, such a science. And I think, again, that's a strong indicator of how confident he's been and how aggressive he is. So definitely good points on your end.
Let's switch gears for a second, because I have to ask you about this. You and I, big Robin Lopez fans. Has your opinion of Robin Lopez changed at all?
Can it get higher? I don't know. I mean,
I'm with you. Yes.
I mean, the call wasn't, I don't know, that egregious. But, you know, it's a late game in a meaningless season. He's a competitor, and he just lost it. And I thought it was awesome and hilarious and perfectly fine. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's as bad as what happened with Golden State and Kevin Durant. I think that was a little bit more insulting or inflammatory on Durant's end. He was particularly insulting of a referee. And I think Brooke was just...
What did you say to the referee? I didn't hear it.
Oh, I can't repeat that on our podcast.
Oh, really? It's that bad?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'll have to go look it up.
Call the blanking foul. you blank ass mother blanker. How about that?
I think I figured it out.
Yeah, okay.
I think I read between the lines. I love Robin Lopez's quote after the game. He says, when they asked him about it, "I was emotional. I had a life reaction. I felt I was never given the time to cool down. I was making my way towards the bench, and I was hit with the second tee right away. I was a little caught off guard. It's not something I'm particularly ashamed of."
No,
I play with passion. If I do something I feel is wrong, I apologize for it. If not, I'll stand by it. No apology in that quote. He's standing by it. Rolo for life.
Yes. What I love also is I saw footage as he's being escorted out of the arena down the hallway. He high fives a little girl in the stands. I mean, that was incredible. Yeah, this cartoonish, larger than life character, and he's yelling obscenities and then high fiving children. It's awesome.
Speaking of centers, Hassan Whiteside returned from a 9-game absence that he missed with a hip issue. He scored 8 points and had 7 rebounds in a little under 20 minutes in the game. What were your impressions of Whiteside in his first game back?
Very positive. He looked fluid. He was being as mobile as possible. He had 4 assists, which is tying a career high. So I think that's a really strong game from Whiteside, to be honest with you. We've seen him match up poorly against Rolo in the past. So the fact that he was able to more or less hold his own and do what's expected of him, that's fine. I mean, he only played 19 minutes, so it wasn't like he was going to have an incredibly impactful game as far as his overall production. But while he was in there, he was effective. And again, looking to move the ball around. So I think it's a little bit of evolution from Whiteside.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the 4 assists. I mean, he had 2 assists in the first quarter, I think.
Yeah.
So he came out right away and was willing to be that kind of passer just right from the get-go, and I think that was really positive. Another note, Tyler Johnson left during the first half when he sprained his right ankle. No news yet, David, right, of how severe that might be, but we're going to talk about some of the implications when we get to our Twitter questions. But I haven't seen any news on that recording this Friday afternoon.
From what I saw, he walked out of the arena on his own volition. So he was able to walk without a limp or anything like that. So I wouldn't expect that he'll miss any time. It looked bad, but he continued playing after it happened. So, I don't know how bad it could have been, to be honest.
I mean, this is a guy who's had teeth knocked out. He'll be fine. Miami is within a half game of Washington for the 6th seed with the win. We'll talk about if the Heat should push to surpass the Wizards or just stand pat with the 7th seed. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
Make sure to listen on Tuesdays when Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. To get the latest episode every day, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
We'll get to our spotlight performances after this, but let's go to Twitter and answer some of your questions you sent in using hashtag AskLOHeat. And we'll start with this one from CJ, who asks, with the 76ers vying for the 3rd seed, do you think perhaps that it would be a better matchup for the Heat, considering that it seems to be the only team that will motivate Hassan Whiteside to play hard?
That's an interesting predicament there.
It is, and right now Miami is in the 7th seed, and they're starting to pull away from Milwaukee a little bit, even though Milwaukee, I believe, won against Golden State. Okay. So they are, within the last few 4 or 5 games, starting to pull away. And Basketball Reference at least has their playoff probability statistics have the Heat in 7th, so that the rest of their schedule seems pretty soft. But there is reason to think that, hey, if they can move up to 6th, the Wizards are slipping lately. If they can move up to 6th, again, only a half game behind Washington, and if everything plays out the way that if everything kind of plays out to chalk, you know what I mean? Yeah. The Heat would end up with the tiebreaker because they have a better conference and division record than Washington. Yeah. So even if they had the same record, they would end up getting the 6th seed over Washington. Basketball Reference has the 76ers getting the 3rd seed. Because they have a cake schedule the rest of the way too, and without Joel Embiid, who broke his face, that could be a really good matchup for Miami. And I want to go back to what CJ said. I think he wrote this in before maybe he saw the severity of the Embiid injury. But even without Embiid, I mean, now you're looking at 2 teams: Boston, who we've been talking about as a matchup with 7, right, and now the Sixers, who are a potential matchup with the 6th seed, having maybe lost their best players.
Well, I mean, let's shift the focus because of CJ's question onto Philadelphia. And, you know, first of all, we're not sure that Embiid's going to be out for that long a period of time. He could be back in time for the playoffs. He could be wearing a mask. So he could be, if not at full strength. And I think the issue with the mask, and you know, I got a chance to talk to Clint Capella when he had suffered a facial injury and he had to wear the mask. He only wore it for one game. But he said it was mostly just he didn't like wearing it because it was just so difficult to breathe. You can't wipe your nose. Sweat kind of, you know, congeals in there and makes it very difficult. It's just an uncomfortable apparatus, you know. So not everybody could be like, you know, LeBron James against the Charlotte Bobcats and go off for, what was it, 55?
Right.
That's an inhuman level of performance there. But, you know.
So, players hate that mask. Yeah.
So Embiid will be there. Probably, let's say, because I think if you know, unless he's advised that he's going to suffer a severe injury that could keep him out for a lot longer, I think he has to play during the first round because it's the playoffs, because of everything they've gone through with the process, his drafting, the injuries to him and every other player on that team. I think he'd have to be on there. So that's one thing. On the off chance that he's not, would Whiteside still have that same level of motivation? Like, I mean, he's not going to get geared up to go up against Amir Johnson, is he? I mean, he's not going to feel as inspired and he's not going to be diving on the floor for loose balls going up against Amir Johnson, at least not in my opinion. So I'm not sure that we'll necessarily see that better version of Hassan Whiteside.
That was your favorite play of the whole season, I'm convinced, when Whiteside dove that loose ball. Look, I kind of go back to a question we were asked before about, or just a topic that we've talked about in general. If Miami should even kind of finagle their way to that seventh seed, you know what I mean? If they should purposely lose a game late in the season, if that's what it would take to remain at seven as opposed to moving up to six. And I think now that this basically gives, I think, Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and the Heat culture organization an excuse to say, you know what? Let's just win as many games as we want because that's what we're more comfortable with doing in any way. And I think that's something you believe that they were going to do regardless. Yes. But I thought that they would at least consider blowing a game, like maybe the last game, a couple of games of the season, if it meant remaining at seven. But this now, this injury, this whole predicament, I should say, gives them basically carte blanche. It says, go ahead and win as many games as you want because either way, maybe Embiid will miss the first round. Maybe Irving will miss the first round. And now, you know, the Heat organization doesn't have to go basically against what is in their DNA, which is just to win as many games as possible, for better or worse. And that's sort of my takeaway here is I think just now that I think all bets are off. They're just going to go win as many games. Now, with that said, Miami does have the second easiest remaining strength of schedule in the Eastern Conference. Philadelphia has the easiest remaining strength of schedule. Miami is the second. And then Milwaukee and Washington are around the same zone for third and fourth. So Washington also has an easy schedule left. If Miami drops a game that, and I think you and I suspect that they're going to, I think Basketball Reference is predicting that they're going to go 6-1 or 4-2. I'm sorry, over the next few games, they might drop a Hawks game. They might drop a Knicks game. And if that's the case, they're going to stay right where they are at seven. So.
Well, how about this for a worst case scenario, though? What if they are as engaged as we expect them to be because that's just ingrained in Heat culture? They try to win as many games, risk potential injury, and then for some reason, because of the loss of Embiid, Philadelphia can't ascend to the third seed and Cleveland holds on to it. And next thing you know, a beat up Miami team missing a key player perhaps has to face the Cavaliers in the first round of the playoffs.
That's a really good point. So they should stay at seven. So they should lose games. Okay, you're right. You're right. That's a really good point. Christopher asks, if Tyler Johnson is out, will it help Josh Richardson? He seemed more comfortable without Tyler. Maybe just a hot take, but was interesting to see nonetheless. So I think he's talking about after in that game, right. Josh Richardson just started to look for his own shot and be a little bit more aggressive after Tyler left in the first half. But I was interested to see what the exact stats were on this, David, and I pulled them up on NBA.com. And Josh Richardson's stats, this is for the season, when Tyler Johnson is on the court, he shoots 48% from the field versus 43.4% when he's off the court. So when Tyler Johnson is playing and Josh Richardson is also on the court, Richardson is basically shooting 5 percentage points higher than when Tyler Johnson is off the court. Also, his net rating is 2.4 with Tyler on the court, as opposed to just zero when Tyler is off the court. Now, there's a lot of noise in these numbers and lineup stuff, but basically, Josh Richardson seems fine when Tyler Johnson is on the court. But there is an argument to be made that, like, look, what I was kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier in the show, if Tyler's out, it sort of forces Richardson into that position of having to be more aggressive with his own shot.
It makes sense. I mean, Rodney McGruder, who started the second half in place of Tyler Johnson, he's much more of a complimentary player who's not going to look for his own shot. He's going to go in there, play his hard-nosed defense, and then if he's got a shot, he'll take it. You know, even when you got a chance to talk to him, obviously he's been putting the ball down more often, and he has been a little bit more aggressive, but I still don't think he's necessarily hardwired for that. I think it did, like you said, force Richardson into being a little bit more aggressive, and that's fine, but I wouldn't expect that. I think, again, the Heat are probably better with Richardson and Johnson both on the floor, but because there's, you know, duplication of their skill sets. Johnson can shoot from the perimeter. He can drive to the rim. He can create shots for others. And I think that's probably why you see Richardson's numbers go up when Tyler's in there, because he can drive to the rim and create for a wide open, Josh Richardson on the perimeter, and he can get a much clearer shot for a catch and shoot opportunity. So, I mean, personally, I think that it would probably behoove Miami to have both Tyler and Richardson out there. So, unfortunately for Christopher, I have to disagree with his question.
It might help Richardson take more of a lead dog role going into the playoffs, maybe. I could see that from like a mental standpoint. The stats all bear it out. Richardson is better when Tyler's on the floor, but for all those reasons you said. But I don't know. I'm trying to find a silver lining, I suppose. But let's move on to our next question from Umar, who writes in, with Tyler being injured, Winslow should move into the starting lineup. At the three, Josh moves to the two, and Winslow at the three with JJ at the four is a very explosive and solid defensive lineup. Trust, that's my lineup on 2K, LOL. What do you guys think?
I mean, if it's Umar's lineup in 2K, what are you going to do? I mean, it does sound presumably like it would be a good one, but I mean, I really like what Winslow's been able to provide off the bench. Him and D-Wade coming in there and leading that second unit has been –
with Olenek.
Yeah, I mean, that's been key. They've had some really nice offense with Wade creating from as he drives to the rim or making plays for others, perimeter shooting from Olenek and Ellington, guys like that. And, of course, the occasional opportunity for Winslow as well. So, I mean, it's just, I don't think that Eric Spoelstra, as you pointed out on a number of occasions, he's not really interested in changing his rotations that way. He'd rather bring a guy deeper on the bench into the starting lineup the way he did with Jordan Mickey rather than upset his rotation. So I can't imagine that. It's a good option. It sounds interesting as far as that defensive presence there. But at the same time, you need that defense in the second unit, and you can stagger rotations so that it's still – you don't have any kind of glaring deficiency.
I tweeted that after Eric Spoelstra decided to start Jordan Mickey in Whiteside / Bam's place, that – Eric Spoelstra's statue out of AAA should be just him subbing in a deep bench guy just to maintain his rotation integrity. I don't know what that statue would look like, but that should be what it is. I think that's what he's going to do.
No, I've got a better idea. Sorry. As far as the statue, I want him standing in front of like a cart with like an audiovisual cart in front of an old VCR as the video coordinator, because that symbolizes Heat culture perfectly.
He should get two statues.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm okay with that. They started Rodney Magruder in the second half. I think that's what they're going to do going forward. This is a good excuse for Spoelstra to just get Magruder some more minutes. We know he loves Magruder. He's recently fell out of the regular rotation only because there's so many guys on this roster, especially in the backcourt. So, I think he's
Isn't that interesting though? Again, like Magruder doesn't play for several games, and then he kind of gets a couple minutes in a blowout over Cleveland, and then all of a sudden he's starting a second half when a player goes down. It's just it's unbelievable. You can never really quite predict what happens. Well, yeah. Stay ready, next man up, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, we're going to our spotlight performances next. But first, did you know that you can stream this podcast, Locked On Heat, on Spotify right now? It's easy. Open Spotify on your device or on your desktop, click on Browse, and then click on the podcast section, or just search for Locked On Heat. You can also stream the show on your favorite smart speaker, such as the Amazon Echo or Google Home. Now it's that much easier to stay up to date on the latest episodes of Locked On Heat, the only daily Miami Heat podcast. Spotlight player time, David. Who you got?
Got Justice Winslow. Not a huge night from him, but a really nice, efficient, and well-rounded one. 26 minutes of play where he finished with 13 points, 5 of 8 shooting, and 1 of 3 from the perimeter. But he also chipped in 9 really aggressive rebounds. It's amazing to see him just kind of swoop in there. His timing, his athleticism, certainly at peak form there, and he was just a very, very strong rebounder. Also had two assists, two steals, and a block. So, again, very well-rounded, should I say Draymond Green-esque type performance?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you should. Okay. I think going back to even what we were talking about on our Twitter questions, you know, you mentioned that you like what Justice Winslow's bringing off the bench. This was a really good example. This game was a really good example of that. I'm done messing with Winslow. They found the right role for him. I'm very happy with it. This game against Chicago was a great display of what he can do as your sort of five-tool utility guy. And I mean, I'm enjoying where Justice Winslow's at in his game right now, especially going into the playoffs. He's been a solid player all around. I mean, he's just able to do all of the little things. You look at his 9 rebounds, you look at the 2 assists and the 2 steals he had. He's just loading up the box score. Nothing's really jumping out. It's not like he's going out there and scoring 22 points like Josh Richardson, but he's just sort of checking all the boxes, and that's what you couldn't ask for anything more than that from him. My spotlight player is Kelly Olynyk. He had 11 points and 3 rebounds. Didn't have any assists in the game, which I thought was interesting, but I really want to focus on when after Robin Lopez was ejected and then high-fived the little girl, the Bulls cut Miami's 19-point lead to 12. Similar to the other night where I was it against Cleveland and then Olynyk scored 7 yes. straight points.
Yes.
Olynyk went out and scored 6 straight points against the Bulls and just closed the door on them. And it's he's starting to remind me of Big Shot Bosh. Like anytime that the Heat needed a big shot down the stretch, and you know, it wasn't always necessarily when they were already up double digits, right. But he's just like, you know what? I got this. And it seems like Olynyk within these last couple of games is just like, okay, we're not going to blow a big lead. We've done that too many times earlier in the season. I got this. Like, I'm going to make some shots. I'm going to just make some shots here. And I don't want to call him Big Shot Olynyk because that's not fair to Chris Bosh, but I want to send this out to our listeners as a request. Tweet us. We need a nickname for Olynyk when he does things like this, because he's done them several times in his first season in Miami, and he's only going to continue to do them. And I need to have a good nickname. We need to have a good nickname for Locked On Heat for Kelly Olynyk, not Big Shot Bosh, but something similar, but for Kelly, for when the playoffs roll on and it's game 7 and he goes off for 30 points. I need a nickname for that. So I'm putting that out to our listeners. Tweet us at Locked On Heat. We need good nicknames for Kelly Olynyk. I thought of Kelly Onions Linick, but that is really bad. So
that is terrible. I kind of love it because it's so terrible. Can we go with the E-Reed, the Oh My Olynyk? But
oh my gosh, I can't stand that.
Okay, I guess not.
Olynyk, oh my.
So, you know what? I don't mind the comparison to Big Shot Bosh. You know, obviously Chris Bosh being infinitely more athletic and capable of much more on the floor than Kelly Olynyk does. But at the same time, you'd have to say both players very high Q, understanding for the ebbs and flows of a game, and understanding that a moment like that can cost a team a win. And I think that's where the credit comes in from an IQ mental standpoint. Kelly comes in there, recognizes that a game could slip through their fingers, and understands the magnitude of that, and is willing to change things by scoring those points, by being more aggressive. You pointed out the 0 assists. Why would he pass the ball when he knows that he's the one who needs to score and score now in order to save a victory against a particularly bad Chicago team? So I think, Chris, you could probably make that same argument that he was as you know, maybe not as capable of scoring as Dwayne Wade in his prime or LeBron when he was with the Heat, but at the same time, understanding that he had to take specific moments to pick and choose when to score, and it took him scoring at big moments like that where a game could slip through their fingers. So I like the comparison. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. that's a great place to leave off here, because that's all we have for today. We'll be back next week. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/LockedOnHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Wrap it up, B.